Making the world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. All right.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George... Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio's... Broadcasting straight up out of Chicago, Illinois, and it looks good. All right, thanks for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show, folks. This is a Wednesday. In case you're podcasting the show later, this is Wednesday, April, next to the last week in April 2017. And it is another beautiful day in the city of Chicago. And wherever you are in the world, I hope you're enjoying the weather that's been given to you. And, you know, and everything is happening great. You know, I mean, we don't need to be feeling sad and depressed and lonely and things like that. That will only deplete your lifespan. That's all that will do. Just try to... keep a smile on your face. Be nice to each other out there. Be kind. It's so easy to do that. So many people are so mean and nasty and just ornery, you know. But, you know, be nice to one another. And when you go out, always try to look your best. Sometimes if you're feeling depressed and you're looking your best, you know, positive things can happen. I mean, if you're feeling lonely or if you feel like there's nobody there or if you feel like you have been a failure in your life, you know, perk up. You know, I mean, there's nothing to feel depressed or to be down in the dumps about. I mean, the day it's great. Get out and get some exercise. We're going to talk about that later on in the show. And when I say exercise, you know, exercise stimulates your metabolism and it can help you to think positive. And obviously, you're going to live a lot longer and you don't have to have a $100 a month gym, a gym membership. You don't have to have that. I mean, walking 30 minutes, sometimes 15 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe an hour a day can do so much. I can tell you one thing, walking does drop the pounds, but we're going to talk about that a little bit later. My guest today on the show, Angel Tucker. And we're still going to be calling off books. People submitted to my website on Facebook. We're still going to be calling those off. Like I said before, I probably will not be able to get to them all, but I'll get to as many as I possibly can. Some I'll probably repeat, but because that's just the way it is here. And it's beautiful. It's great. Once again, my guest is Angel Tucker. You know, so we'll see what that's about. Once again, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm on Amazon. I'm all over the place, so I'm not too hard to find. So, you know, and once again, if you want to get your book on the show, just drop me an email or a message in my inbox or, you know, or my phone number is somewhere out there. If you can find it, give me a call and leave a message. about getting your book on the show. Just talk about your book and talk about you. All right, you've been listening to the George Swasser Jr. Show. All right, what is the latest thing? Aaron Hernandez, a former New England Patriot. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you heard this. I probably don't have to repeat it. But it's just so interesting how people just kill themselves inside the jail cells. If I can back up a minute, it's just so interesting how people just at the height of their career just ruin their lives. I mean, his life, he ruined his life because he couldn't keep away from bad people. That's all it is. I heard that Tom Brady was trying to warn him to stay away from awful people, but he just couldn't do it. He couldn't stay away from awful people, and he got himself in jail. There was a possibility, or maybe he did have a $40 million contract with the New England Patriots. He was a lineman. And Tom Brady at that time, as always, was the quarterback of the team. And it just kind of just surprises me every time I hear about a young person with their lives on track. Their lives are budding, and they do something stupid, and it's all over. It's all over. You know, so we're out here trying to save as many people as possible, because it is not easy. It's not easy. All right, hear about your book mentioned on the George Wilder Jr. Show this week, Monday through Thursday. Tomorrow's the last day we will mention the books, and we will probably do this again next month or the month after. 2017, because the amount of people submitting their books, if you don't hear your book the first time, tune in to the next day, and I promise I will try to get to them all before this week is out. And I don't know if I can get to them all because there's so many other things I'm doing, but I think it was a good gesture. I think authors got to know each other by participating in this. And that's a good thing. And that's a good thing because we're all trying to sell books. We're all trying to get noticed. We all want people to say nice things about some of the things that we do. And I try to do a little bit of that. Okay. Broken Bastard. That's the title of a book. Okay. And it's by Susan Hornsnail. Okay. Sometimes I have problems pronouncing names because people have weird names, or either I'm just, backwards on that. Anyway, Broken Bastard by Susan Hornsnail. And she's saying, thank you, George. Okay, some of these I've mentioned before. Duels of the Heart, Holland Ray. Okay, this is, okay, all right. Randall Chadwick, Dangerous Toys. That's beautiful. I think I mentioned that, but that's okay. Dave Berkeley, Life Tales, Books. Okay, all righty. Okay, Patrick Feenan, I Want to Live. All these books are on Amazon. Everything I mentioned is on Amazon. So you go check out everything that I've said called out on Amazon. I think it's beautiful. I think it's great. Okay. Okay, Vicky, no, I think I've called out this one before. Anyway, I'm going to do it again. Friends, Grief, and Men, Defying Stereotypes. Be a Man. Oh, wow, okay. All right, Society Expects Men to Take Charge. I don't know if I agree with that. Getting Things Done, I do get a lot of things done, and Keep Their Emotions in Check. But what? And it goes on and on. Okay, I can argue with that, but I won't. Okay, I'm just here to try to call off some of these. Dash Dixon, Queens Don't Strike, Dash Dixon, okay. I believe she was on the show once, I think. Okay, we mentioned those. Diane Dimitri, okay, she's on Amazon. She's on Amazon, okay. I'm looking for a name that I can pronounce without messing it up, right? All righty. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to have Joe Walter, A Grave for Kings. All righty. Okay. author Denise Coleman snatched away. I think I mentioned that already, but it's okay. Trailer Trash, Rick Johnson, of course. All of this stuff is on Amazon. So I hope you're out there. I hope if you're readers, and I hope everybody out there is listening to my to this show are readers, because we are authors and we do things that are should be read. Yeah. Okay. Guardian Domination. That's on Amazon. All righty, we're going to move right along on into the show, because it is so beautiful in the city of Chicago. 6:10 in some areas in the city of Chicago, Central Standard Time. And we're going to see what we can do here. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to try a little bit of Ashley Judd.
All right. Next on the to-do list. When we take over the DNC.
Oh, Michael. My God.
Ashley.
My name is Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd is here.
And I am a feminist. And I want to say hello to Independence Avenue in the back. All the way down to 17th Street.
Wow.
And I bring you words from Nina Donovan, a 19-year-old in Middle Tennessee, and she has given me the privilege of telling you what she has to say. I am a nasty woman. I'm not as nasty as a man who looks like he bathes in Cheeto dust. A man whose words are a diss track to America. Electoral college sanctioned hate speech contaminating this national anthem. I'm not as nasty as Confederate flags being tattooed across my city. Maybe the South actually is gonna rise again. Maybe for some, it never really fell. Blacks are still in shackles and graves just for being black. Slavery has been reinterpreted as the prison system in front of people who see melanin as animal skin. I am not as nasty as a swastika painted on a pride flag. And I didn't know devils could be resurrected, but I feel Hitler in these streets. A mustache traded for a toupee. Nazis renamed the cabinet electroconversion therapy, the new gas chamber shaming the gay out of America, turning rainbows into suicide notes. I am not as nasty as racism, fraud, conflict of interest, homophobia, sexual assault, transphobia, white supremacy, misogyny, ignorance, white privilege. I'm not as nasty as using little girls like Pokemon before their bodies have even developed. I am not as nasty as your own daughter being your favorite sex symbol. Like your wet dreams infused with your own genes. But yeah, I'm a nasty woman. A loud, vulgar, proud woman. I'm not nasty like the combo of Trump and Pence being served up to me in my voting booth. I'm nasty like the battles my grandmothers fought to get me into that voting booth. I'm nasty like the fight for wage equality. Scarlett Johansson, why were the female actors paid less than half of what the male actors earned last year? See, even when we do go into higher paying jobs, our wages are still cut with blades sharpened by testosterone. Why is the work of a black woman and a Hispanic woman worth only 63 and 54 cents of a white man's privileged daughter? This is not a feminist myth. This is inequality. So we are not here to be debunked. We are here here to be respected. We are here to be nasty. I'm nasty. Like my blood stains on my bed sheets, we don't actually choose if and when to have our periods. Believe me, if we could, some of us would. We don't like throwing away our favorite pairs of underpants. Tell me, why are pads and Tampax still taxed? Ooh, that was a brand name. Why are tampons and pads still taxed when Viagra and Rogaine are not? Is your erection really more than protecting the sacred, messy part of my womanhood? Is the bloodstain on my jeans more embarrassing than the thinning of your hair? I know it is hard to look at your own entitlement and privilege. You may be afraid of the truth. I am unafraid to be honest. It may sound petty, bringing up a few extra cents. It adds up to the pile of change I have yet to see in my country. I can't see. My eyes are too busy praying to my feet, hoping you don't mistake eye contact for wanting physical contact. Half my life, I have been zipping up my smile, hoping you don't think I want to unzip your jeans. I am unafraid to be nasty because I am nasty, like Susan, Elizabeth, Eleanor, Amelia, Rosa, Gloria, Condoleezza, Sonia, Malala, Michelle, Hillary. And our pussies ain't for grabbing. Therefore, reminding you that our walls are stronger than America's ever will be. Our pussies are for our pleasure. They are for birthing new generations of filthy, vulgar, nasty, proud, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, Sikh, you name it, for new generations of nasty women. So if you, a nasty woman, or you love one who is, let me hear you say, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I love you. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ashley Judd. That was no doubt Ashley Judd. I play that clip every now and then because it gets me revved up. I think she, obviously, she's not a Donald Trump supporter. That was during the time, I think back in January 2016, they had the Women's March. And they were marching all over the world. Election. Election in which the
once again, Chicago is making national headlines for all the wrong reasons. New York Times readers woke up to this morning's headline, Chicago tallies grim accounts of violent year.
Rafe, and this is 7 ways to get more reviews to your books. Now, as you know, the more reviews that you have on your books, the more sales you're going to make. Now, that's because, first of all, you have more social proof. So you have more people that have gone.
All right. Next on the to-do list. When we take over the DNC.
Oh, Michael. My God.
Ashley.
My name is Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd is here.
And I am a feminist. And I want to say hello to Independence Avenue in the back, all the way down to 17th Street.
Wow.
And I bring you words from Nina Donovan, a 19-year-old in Middle Tennessee, and she has given me the privilege of telling you what she has to say. I am a nasty woman. I'm not as nasty as a man who looks like he bathes in Cheeto dust. A man whose words are a diss track to America. Electoral college sanctioned hate speech contaminating this national anthem. I'm not as nasty as Confederate flags being tattooed across my city. Maybe the South actually is gonna rise again. Maybe for some, it never really fell.
All right, it seems like we're having some internet problems, folks. It might be the computer itself, so stay with me. We're going to try and do this. Okay, it seems like we're having some kind of problems. We're trying to work on it now. All right, we may be having some kind of difficulties on the show, so we may be in and out. I'm hoping that. Anyway, Joe Bruno is saying, hi, George, would you mention your book on my show? I would appreciate it since I know nothing about advertising my book. It's my life memoirs. Okay, Joe, if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, Bono or something to that effect. And his book is on Amazon. Okay. All right. He didn't leave the name of his book. Leave it at that. Let's see. Rod Roberts, My Brother's Journey. Okay. Amazon. We're mentioning some books here. Jess Stevens Hughes. I'll mention his book about once or twice, but I'll do it again. Bestseller, The Eagle, The Sign Eagle, The Sign Eagle. This breathtaking historical novel of action and sequence is set in the year 71 AD. That's one of the things I could never do. I could never be a historical writer. I'm all of my writings, short stories are set in the city. I live in the city, so most of my stuff is set in the cities. But I do have appreciation for historical writing. You know, I really do, but I can't do it myself. That was something that I was not privy in life, is to write about historical things as taken place thousands and thousands of years ago, or hundreds of years ago, if I can say it that way. Anyway, it's amid the exotic and vibrant streets of Rome, of ancient Rome, We're still talking about The Sign Eagle by Jess Stevens Hughes. And that was, I've mentioned it before, Red Karma, a memoir, Natasha Carmen. Okay, I had a guest on the show the other day. We were talking about karma, if I can say it. What goes around comes around. And she was pretty adamant and animated about it. And, you just have to give people credit for certain things that they do. And because I think everybody should find, I actually think everybody should find their niche of what they want to do in life. There's so many people out here, they don't know what they want to do in life. They don't know what, and these are young people. They don't know what they want to do. I mean, when you get, you got some people who can find out what they want to do in life when they're children. I think I found out what I wanted to do in my life when I was a child, totally a child. I had dreams. I had these images in my head of what I wanted to do and what I wanted my life to be like. I used to always dream of the future. What would the future hold for me? And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing today. I could have been doing this type of thing years ago, but there were setbacks and things happening, so I couldn't get started on some of the things I'm doing now a lot earlier and a lot sooner, because of a lot of setbacks and a lot of bad luck and things of that nature. But I'm here now, folks, and I love what I'm doing, and I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing. I wish I could bring my son into this, but I actually think he doesn't have what it takes to do this, because if he did, he would be here. But he will be doing this better than I could. But I tested him one day, and I still may let him do the show one day, even though I'm pretty sure it's going to be not of quality. But who knows? He might fool me this time. But then again, he may not. You know. So we just have to go from there and do what we can do from there. Cass, I look at it as a radio show, an internet radio show that reaches the world, and that's fantastic. You know, find something. If you don't know what you're going to do, find something to do that you enjoy. It doesn't matter what it is. If you enjoy it, stick with it. Learn, and most of all, do not make it a hobby. Make it a business. I mean, do what you love and make money at it. You know, because I think hobbies are a waste of time, especially if you're working hard at a hobby and you're not getting paid for it. There are so many people that don't know how or will not learn how to get themselves noticed for what they do. Now, it doesn't make sense to write a book. And there are so many people out here who have written books and not tell anybody about it, not to advertise it, not mentioning it. That's crazy. I always say, why would you write a book if you don't want anybody to know that you've written it? Why would you want to write a book if you don't know, if you don't want anybody to ever read it? Why did you buy a book if you're afraid to go on television or radio to talk about it? You've got people out there that's doing it. And they're continuing to write and not let anybody know that their book is there. Yeah, I've always said this. If you write a good book, a great book, and you for the first time or the second great book, it doesn't matter how good your book is. It doesn't matter how much you think people should read your book. You may have the greatest book in the world, but if you do not let anybody know that it's out there, it will get read. It will not get purchased. That's hard to purchase, because there are so many books being published every year in the millions. And a lot of these books are free. People love getting things for free. Why would they pay 99 cents, $2.99, or even $15 for your book when they can probably surf the internet, the web, and find books talking about some of the same things that you're talking about in your book for free or a lot less? Millions and millions of books are published each year. I want to say each month, because people are out here, they're writing their asses off. They're writing their asses off. And some people are writing and their writing isn't garnering. Their writing is not making them any money, if I can say it that way, making them no money. But they're doing it because they enjoy it. They're doing it. It's not a hobby. They're doing it because that's what they enjoy doing. You know, that's what they enjoy doing, because it is so many books out here, folks. It's a shame. You know, people say, why are you writing? You ain't got nowhere to write. Yeah, if it makes you feel good, you do it. But people are making money at what they're doing. They are making money writing. They are. They might not be making as much as they want to make, as much as they think. But as an author, you have to be the one. You have to be the one to push your book. Nobody else is going to push your book for you. You can hire all of these publicity firms and put your books on this many websites trying to get it noticed. You have to be out there pushing your book. I mean, you've got to do it. You know, especially if you're broke and don't have any money, you're either going to push your book or it's going to die. It's going to die. And I can tell you, there's a lot of people out here. People want stuff for free. If you give your book away for free or 99 cents, there's a possibility that people will read it. I mean, nobody's going to go out and pay $10 for a book. That's old news now, unless you were Danielle Steele or Nora Roberts or Robert Ludlum or Vince Flynn or John Grisham. You're not that, so nobody's going to actually. Or James Ellroy. I just discovered James Ellroy. He's the guy who wrote the book, I think, in 1997. L.A. Confidential. It's a great book. He's got a lot of other great books out there. I've just discovered him. I love when I just discover authors, people I should have known about for years, but it's just so many authors out here. I mean, it's just so many writers, and that's a good thing, because I've always said writers are brothers and sisters in the word, and we are. We're all together, family, because we're doing some of the same things. We're doing some of the same things. We're writing. We're interested in some of the same things. We have the same interest, you know. And I think all writers should be friends. Actually, friends. I think all writers should. Police officers are friends with police officers. I can go. Teachers are friends with other teachers. Writers should be friends with other writers. Authors should be friends with authors. And see. If you're listening to the show, and I hope you are, see how I go off on a tantrum, see how I go off on something that's totally not unrelated, but that's what the George Wilder Jr. Show is about. We'll be right back. All right. I told you at the beginning of the show that my guest was Angel Tucker. We're still waiting, but there's always a possibility that she has something else maybe better to do. I don't know what there is that's better to do than being on the George Wilder Jr. show, but it happens. People forget to put the date on the calendar or something else comes up. But I always tell people, if you're scheduled to be on this show and something happens and you decide you want to cancel, there's nothing wrong with dropping me an email or a phone call or whatever, preferably an email, to let me know. Because if you let me know in time that you're going to be canceling, I can always try and reschedule you. But Angel Tucker may not be on the show. Her time is passing, but who knows? She may call in or come by at some later time. All right. I talked about yesterday, Easter. I retitled the show yesterday, Easter Massacre, because that's what it was. Because at the broadcast of this show, at this podcast, Easter was last weekend, and from reports saying that there was 45 shootings over the Easter weekend. And I just went off. if you haven't listened to the show, if you want to listen to it again, you can always podcast it. I went off because it's just ridiculous. And I'm going to say a little bit about it today, but I'm not going to do a whole segment on it like I did yesterday, the day before. 45 shootings over the Easter weekend in the city of Chicago. That's just crazy. And like I said before, these people and these politicians, our leaders, they're not putting crime in the city of Chicago, making it their top priority. And I think that's what it should be done, is to make crime a top priority, because you can't keep throwing bodies and uniforms over in these high crime areas. You're going to have some kind of plan with solutions. You just can't keep doing it, and they just keep doing it. And we need, and like I said before, we need new leadership in the city of Chicago. I mean, if you're living in a city where the shootings are up, you need new leadership, period. Because one of the things these guys are supposed to do when they're elected to office is to make sure that you and I are protected, that we can walk down the street, go to the park, go to the store, or just hang out outside and have fun. You know, you can't do that if you're ducking and dodging bullets and there's no policeman around, nowhere, they don't patrol like they should. They're just neglecting their jobs. But one of the things they have done and still doing is picking up a taxpayer paycheck. You know what I'm saying? And I think in a lot of these high crime neighborhoods, one of the things that they should be doing is providing 24/7 patrol. 24/7 patrol, or either the National Guard. Okay, I've talked about this yesterday on the show, the National Guard, how some politicians and leaders in the city of Chicago feel that mentioning the National Guard is nasty words. Don't say them. We don't want them. Yeah, but people are constantly dying. You ask some of those people in those high crime neighborhoods if they would want the guard to stop some of the shootings in their neighborhood and keep some people alive, they would give a resounding yes. And they have. But the politicians, they don't listen. They go with. You know, I think the National Guard should, but people are probably saying, well, he's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Don't listen to him. We don't want the guard over here. But the people in those neighborhoods are saying, get the National Guard over there. when somebody's child is dying, has been shot, yeah, we need the National Guard. So it's not just the George Wilder Jr. show saying this. It's the people in, who are affected by this violence every day where the police are coming up short. They need help. Even the police has said that they need help. They even told that they want federal help. So it's not just me. Federal help does include the National Guard. The National Guard. But I'm going to say this again, no matter how many bodies you put over there in these high crime areas, you have to have a solution. You have to have a plan. You see a bunch of guys standing on the damn street corner and you know they're up to no good. Tell them to disperse and get the hell home or go wherever where they got to go. How hard is that? Oh, but you're messing. You're stamping on their, you're stomping on their rights. They have no rights. If they're crooks and thugs, drug dealers and pimps, they have no rights. They have no rights under the sun because they're criminals and they should be locked up. So I'm not going to delve in this too much because there's always next weekend and the next shootings and, you know, so it goes on and on and on and on because the police department has no plan of how to lower the crime statistics in this beautiful and wonderful city that I live in, that I love, and most of us do. But we want a safe place. Chicago is not safe. I mean, the politicians and the leaders of the city, they're not going to tell you that. They're not going to tell you that, especially the politicians. They ain't going to tell you that because they want to get reelected. But it's not safe. Let's say if you walk out of your house and somehow you make it back home, you have just been lucky. And sometimes luck runs out. The thugs are out here looking for somebody to knock in the head and take their phone or their property, money or whatever. They're out here full time. You got the pimps out here. They're out here trying to get you to buy sex from one of their girlfriends or something. You've got gangbangers standing there. I mean, you have to do something. You've got to do something, but there's being nothing done. I mean, you can hire all the cops you want, but if you don't have a plan or a solution of trying to take this thing down, it's not going to work. You got to have a plan. You just can't throw young police officers into high crime areas who do not have any experience in being in those kinds of situations. You're putting their lives on the line. You want to put some veterans over there, people who have been in these kinds of war zones, crime zones, if I may, on the south and west sides of the city. Chicago is a beautiful city. The north side is beautiful. I think that the south and west sides of the cities, they're also beautiful, but we just got to get the bad element out. This is prime real estate. Chicago is prime real estate. Every corner of the city is prime real estate. I mean, you've got people, and I've talked about this before, you've got people leaving the city because of the high crime. People have been moving away from those high crime areas in some parts of the city. They're moving away. They're moving out of the city because of it. But you never hear Rahm Emanuel or Bruce Rauner say that people are leaving the city. They are in droves. You know why they're leaving? They can afford to do so. Why would you want to live in a city where every goddamn night you're on national news for some horrendous murder? For some horrendous murder. Killings. 45. Well, I mean, there's been weekends in Chicago where there's been 67 killings on the week. Yeah. You know, the city is just not safe. I say it's not safe because you don't really see officers. I mean, I'm on the north side of the city, And I barely see officers patrolling around here. They may say, well, they're not patrolling on the north side because there's less crime on the north side. Give me a damn break. When you live in the city of Chicago, no side of the city is safe. Crime could occur anywhere to anyone at any time. I do admit less crime over here, but do not say that crime per se cannot happen on the north side or the east side of the city, because it does. You've got crime that's happening in this city that's going unreported. You don't hear it on the news. Now, it's maybe it hasn't, it's not lucrative that important, but crime is happening on the news. You know, crime is happening right now on the radio, and so you have to have a plan, and a plan is not hiring 1,000 more, or 2,000 more, 100 more. There's a massacre in the city of Chicago, a weekend massacre, and you have to have a plan. If you plan.
I want to talk to you about the Electoral College and why it matters. All right, I know this doesn't sound like the most sensational topic of the day, but stay with me because I promise you it's one of the most important. To explain why requires a very brief civics review. The President and Vice President of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people. Rather, they are chosen by 538 electors.
Good evening, family. This is Oliver Sandelay out of New Orleans, Louisiana, coming to you with another great and informative video. Peace and blessing to all the melanated family.
My name is Carol Howell, and I'm with UC Davis Center for Healthy Aging, and it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Laura Mosqueda. She is the Chief of Geriatrics at UC Irvine School of Medicine, and she's a professor of family medicine and holds the Ronald W. Reagan Endowed Chair in Geriatrics. She sees patients at the UC Irvine Senior Health Center and participates in research and education as well. And her topic today is on elder abuse. Thanks, Carol. It's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about this important topic of elder abuse. It's going to be a challenging topic, though. This is something that we don't talk about very often, and I think we really need to start challenging everybody in our society to think about this issue of elder abuse and understand it a little bit more. It's challenging in a number of different ways. I want people to imagine what it's like in terms of what elder abuse really is, to really ponder what it means to people, to take it beyond just the fact that, oh, that's a real shame that this occurs in our society, but to understand it as the trauma it really is to the people who are directly affected by it and everybody who loves them. I want you to acknowledge that this really exists, and I'm going to prove it to you as we talk today. And I want you to believe two things. I want you to believe that anyone can be a victim and anyone can be a perpetrator. And this, I think, is particularly challenging for us to really understand and take in. Well, what do we mean when we talk about elder abuse? There are a variety of categories of elder abuse as defined in state law in California, and I have them listed here on the screen: physical, sexual, financial abuse, neglect by other people towards somebody, neglecting yourself. Issues of abandonment and abduction, where people are actually taken across state lines, and psychological abuse. All of these types of abuse that I've just mentioned are reportable abuse. In other words, we are required many of us to report these to the state if we have a suspicion, although psychological abuse or emotional abuse is an optional report. We're going to focus in on the topic of physical abuse, neglect, and some issues related to sexual abuse as well. I'm going to go through a few examples, and unfortunately I have to tell you that these examples are based on real cases that I have been involved in. Here's an example of financial abuse. A 55-year-old woman who threatens her mother, if you don't sign on the dotted line to pay for my car, you're going to go into a nursing home. Another example, a 30-year-old man who befriends a widow. She's lonely, she's depressed, she lost her husband less than a year ago. And what people who are sort of predators will often do is find a hole, a gap, an emotional need somebody has, and fill that. And what does he do? He obtains the password for her ATM card and offers to help her buy groceries. And then he also helps himself to cash so that he has some for his own spending to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars over a period of a year. Examples of physical abuse, pulling somebody's hair, in fact, dragging somebody by their hair across a carpet, throwing food or objects at somebody, denying access to pain medication, slapping, hitting, punching. A recent case I'm involved in involves a 16-year-old girl who was punching her grandmother in the face. These are the sad realities of what's going on. One of the more hidden types of abuse that I'd like to bring to your attention has to do with neglect. And before I give you some examples of neglect, I think it deserves a little bit of an explanation. When we talk about neglect, we're talking about a relationship, somebody who has assumed responsibility or care and custody for another individual who's unable to care for themselves. And when this person who has assumed this responsibility does not provide appropriate care, such as basics, food, clothing, and shelter, medical care, making sure the person's hygiene is reasonably taken care of, looking after things like health and safety hazards, when these things are not attended to in a reasonable way, we call this neglect. Here are some of the examples that I've seen. People who are lying in urine and feces, and I don't just mean a dirty diaper for a few minutes here or there. I mean people who are lying in their own urine and feces for hours, days, weeks at a time. People who have very elongated, filthy nails, matted hair, living in filthy conditions. People who are not fed or given fluids and they become malnourished and dehydrated. It's not good enough for somebody who's unable to get around to just leave some food at the bedside if they can't reach for it and feed themselves. People who develop deep open wounds that we call pressure sores, sometimes all the way down to their bones, because no one has repositioned them and they're unable to move on their own. These are some examples of neglect that we see. Well, how common is this problem of elder abuse? It's a great, great question, but it's a very hard one to answer. As you can imagine, it's hard to just knock on somebody's door and say, is anybody abusing grandma? So the question then becomes, how do we figure out how common a problem it is? We also need to understand that there are some difficulties in establishing abuse related to people's reluctance to even admit it's occurring. Not only can we not knock on the door to ask if anybody's abusing grandma, but grandma might not want to tell us if there's abuse going on. She might be ashamed that her own grandson is doing this to her. Many older adults fear losing their independence and, in fact, would rather remain at home in an abusive situation than go to a facility such as a nursing home. Again, a very sad reality. And unlike children, older adults can just sort of fade quietly away in our society and nobody thinks about it, nobody questions it. With kids, if they don't show up at school, we wonder what has happened to them. But we're very accepting of older adults sort of disappearing, oh, they got sick and you never see them again. So it's hard to know really what's going on sometimes. People who are being abused might be so incapacitated physically, cognitively, emotionally, that they're unable to even report that they're being abused. So people might be too incapacitated to report, but the other thing that sometimes occurs is that signs of abuse may be missed or mistaken for usual aging. After all, it's pretty common to have bruises as we get older. It's not uncommon to have a hip fracture, and so it can be really difficult to tell whether or not some of these injuries were a result of abuse or just something that happened by mistake. So I'm going to give you our best guess or guesstimate in terms of how common abuse is, but we also want to recognize that it probably is an underestimate. The best study we have so far is called the National Elder Abuse Incident Study, published 10 years ago now, 1998, where there was some attempt to quantify the problem. And this is what they found, is that in a one-year period, there were 236,000 reports of seniors abused at home and 50,000 reports of abuse in nursing homes. I want you to really pay attention to this because one of the common myths is that abuse occurs in nursing homes and it's really not an issue in society, when the reality is that the vast majority of abuse occurs in private homes, and the most common perpetrator is a family member. What did they learn? Well, not only do you have 236,000 reports of abuse in the community, 50,000 in nursing homes, but for every report of abuse, at least five, some people think maybe triple that, go unreported. So when you look at the numbers, you're talking about at least a million older adults in 1998 victims of abuse. This is a big problem. So what happens now when we start projecting out in terms of numbers of older adults who live in the United States? And let's take a look at a graph for just a moment to examine this issue. You can see that the number of people over the age of 65, of course, is rising at a very, very rapid rate. One of the wonderful things now is that our life expectancies have gone up in a very dramatic fashion in just the past 100 years. But pay attention in particular to this red line, people who are 85 and over. They are the most rapidly growing segment of our society in the United States. Their numbers of people over the age of 85 are growing at an exponential rate. Look at the way the number takes off after the year 2030. And that's not very far off. Why do we have a special category for elders? In California, the law is that after the age of 65 is when we call something elder abuse. Does that mean it's okay to abuse somebody when they're 64 and then on their birthday at 65 it becomes criminal? Well, the reason we really talk about this special category for elders is that as we grow older, we do become more vulnerable to mistreatment. And so it just becomes a practical matter to have kind of an age cutoff for it, which I think is a reasonable way to go. What are some of these vulnerabilities? Well, as we grow older, it might be harder to defend ourselves from being abused. It might be harder to defend yourself from somebody coming at you with a blow. So it might be harder physically to defend yourself. And certainly emotionally, it might be harder to defend yourself against some of the verbal attacks that can be landed at you. You also may be more dependent on others than you have in the past. We're all used to and enjoy being fairly independent creatures. And now if we begin to have some difficulty and we need help with very personal things like dressing, like grooming, like hygiene, all of a sudden there are more people involved in your life, more hands touching you, and again, vulnerabilities increase. There's also this fear that we talked about a few minutes ago, fear of losing your independence if a report is made. So now somebody might really be able to threaten you, sign over the house or I won't let you live in your own home anymore to help you stay in your own home. You'll have to go into a nursing home. Older adults are very susceptible to these sorts of threats, and that's quite easy to imagine. I want to spend just a moment talking to you about dementia as a special issue. I certainly have observed time and time again that people with dementia are particularly vulnerable to elder abuse. Alzheimer's disease, of course, is the most common type of dementia. And we need to recall that dementia is not just memory loss, but loss of other cognitive functions. So that people with a dementia certainly have short-term memory loss, but also have problems with things like judgment, reasoning, insight, language, difficulty comprehending things. And so you can imagine as people go through different stages of dementia, their risk of abuse also can be quite high. So in the early stages when you're having memory trouble and difficulty comprehending things, people might have you sign on the dotted line and you might lose thousands of dollars. You might lose your house, other sorts of financial abuse that occurs. As people then move through the different stages of dementia and in the very end stage be very dependent, they may end up suffering from some very severe neglect. Dementia gets much more common as we grow older. So if you look at everybody over the age of 65, about 3 to 5% of people have a dementing illness. But past the age of 85, you're probably dealing with close to half of our population with dementia. And remember back to that slide we looked at a moment ago in terms of the growth of people over the age of 65, the growth of the number of people over the age of 85 in our society. People who have dementia may be unable to report abuse. You may no longer be able to use a telephone or know how to make a report. One thing that really scares me is we tend to really discount people who have dementing illnesses like Alzheimer's disease. So if a report is made, they're not believed. After all, they have a dementia. We really can't believe anything they say, and they get discounted. And people, particularly in the middle and later stages, may be unable to even recognize that they're being abused because they have such severe cognitive difficulties, they don't even comprehend the bad situation that they're in. Well, why is this happening? Why does elder abuse occur? And we don't really know the answer to this question, but I want to throw out a few possibilities for us to think about, and perhaps you can argue about them with some folks later on. Is it a mental illness problem, or is it a caregiver who has, say, a bipolar disorder, or has schizophrenia, or has some other sort of mental health problem that makes them unable to properly care for a loved one? Is it that we just live in a violent society, that now pushing and shoving and hitting people has become more commonplace, and this is now translating into older adults as well? Is it a sense of entitlement? I'm going to get that money anyway. I may as well get it sooner than later. Is it stress? Boy, I'm trying to take care of the kids. My husband wants dinner as soon as he gets home. And now I'm taking care of his mother, my mother-in-law, and I just can't handle all this. And she keeps asking me the same question over and over again. And finally, I just can't take it. So I just feel stressed. Or is that an excuse? Is it, as many people in the domestic violence community talk to us, really an issue of power and control? And we certainly see domestic violence in late life. Is it an issue of ageism? Do we just not care about what happens to older adults in our society? Do we just feel that, well, they're old anyway, so it doesn't matter as much? This scares me, but I've heard people speak like this. It's not as important if an older adult gets abused and if a child gets abused because they're not going to live that much longer anyway. I think this is a horrible notion, and as a society, we need to confront that many of us carry these beliefs deep within us. So some questions to ponder. What is our responsibility as family members? What is our responsibility as neighbors and friends? Are we ageist? Or do we have some concern about violating privacy? And we're always trying to balance these sorts of issues out. We don't want Big Brother watching after us. On the other hand, if we have a concern about a neighbor or a friend who we haven't seen, what is our responsibility to check in and make sure that they're okay, that they're not being isolated and kept in a back room, and that nobody's allowing phone calls to come in? I don't have answers. Right now I have questions that I'd like people to think about. What is our responsibility as a society? Are there laws that need to be enacted, or are there laws that are barriers right now to doing a good job in terms of care for older adults who are vulnerable? What role could the government play? What role should the government play? There's precious little funding right now that goes into research related to elder abuse, particularly when you compare the numbers of dollars that go into child abuse research, domestic violence research. Why is that? And who is the voice of these vulnerable elders to speak up to say we need to do something more? What policies do we have in place right now that either allow or prevent elder abuse from occurring? So, for example, we have mandated reporting laws, and we now ask that the clergy make reports if they have a reasonable suspicion of elder abuse. Many of us fear making these sorts of reports. We fear that some sort of SWAT team is going to roll in and grab granny out of the house, when in fact that's very far from the truth. What we have are agencies through the government called Adult Protective Services, who I think are some of the unsung heroes in our society, who will go to these homes, sometimes in dangerous situations, to check on an elder to see if they're okay. One thing I've learned is It's not my responsibility to confirm whether or not abuse has occurred. My responsibility as a healthcare provider and my responsibility as a citizen is simply to have a reasonable suspicion. If I have enough of a concern that abuse is occurring, I have a responsibility to report to Adult Protective Services to ask them to check on this person who we have some worries about. They'll then go to the home and hopefully try to make a face-to-face visit and establish whether or not there really is a problem going on. Why is this important? Why should you and the public really care about this issue? Remember this slide? Remember about the number of older adults who are growing in our society? Even if the percentage remains the same in terms of how common elder abuse is, the mere fact that we have growing numbers of people in our society means that this is going to be a growing problem, particularly because we don't yet understand enough about mechanisms to prevent abuse, which of course is our goal. So as the number of older adults in our society grows, and the number in particular of people over the age of 85, the most vulnerable members of our society, grows at an exponential rate, we have to care, and we have to really take more of an activist role in preventing and identifying and doing something when we think elder abuse has occurred. Someday this could be you. Any one of us can be a victim. Any one of us can be a perpetrator. We need to understand and believe these as truisms. I hope I've gotten you a little bit angry. I hope I've stimulated your interest so that you'll want to learn more about the issue of elder abuse. I hope that you'll want to get involved in either a small or a big way. A small way that you can get involved would be to just go and tell 5 people about what you've learned. Just tell 5 people that this is a problem, and you'll help us a great deal. You can also join an organization that we're starting called Elder Peace, which is really a grassroots advocacy organization. Because if you're 85 years old and you have Alzheimer's disease and you're being abused, you have no way to really go vote. You have no way to advocate for yourself. And we really need to help folks on their behalf so that this problem doesn't continue. I thank you for your attention.
Alrighty, that was on elder abuse. We're having some problems on the show, folks, and some difficulty. But it happens. I think it's a slow internet. Sometimes the internet is running fast. Sometimes it runs slow. And when it runs enormously slow, sometimes it interferes with the broadcast. But you know what? Things happen. And I want to talk about, it's 7:12 straight up p.m. Chicago time. It's windy. It's cold. It's cloudy. It's just 2 days ago, it was in the 80s. It was 80s. Now it done dropped down. It feels like, it feels like it's just cold. People have on coats. It's, the wind's high. But I actually want to talk about exercise. Yeah. Exercise. I started talking about this at the beginning of the show, And I just think it's important. I just think it's so important for people. And there's a lot of, when I say exercise, I'm not talking about strength exercise or aerobics or anything, at least not the the dramatic kind of aerobics. I'm going to be talking about walking. I'm going to be talking about walking here, folks. Okay, there's a lot of benefits from walking. You don't need $100 a month gym. Nobody does. I mean, I'm not just talking about the elderly or the seniors out here. I'm talking about anybody who loves to exercise. You don't really have to have these expensive gym memberships to lose weight or to get in shape. And one of the things about walking, when you're walking, you're out in the open and you can enjoy the great, great weather that comes with it. The great weather. And all you have to do is walk. I mean, I see a lot of people out here walking their dogs. This is great. And they only walk their dogs because they know that the dogs can't be sedentary. They have to move. They have to get that blood circulating. And that's most important. You have to get that. This is why I do think that a lot of people who sit around and don't do anything and their blood is not circulating. Hey, you're setting yourself up for a stroke. You're setting yourself up for cancer. You're setting yourself up for heart disease. Get that blood flow. A heart attack. Also, get that blood flowing so that your arteries can become unblocked. Because if your arteries are blocked, bingo, there go you with a heart attack. Let me call off some of the, I'm going to be doing this periodically because I think it's so great that people are going to be exercising. That's one of the things about great weather. You see a lot of people out here jogging, walking, just exercising and enjoying the weather. They're not in some stuffy ass gym or some fitness club or something like that. They're out there on their own and they're doing it on themselves. They don't need no personal trainer. You don't need a personal trainer for what? And one of the things I do know that walking drops the pounds quicker than anything. I mean, especially if you do enough of it, it drops the pounds, partner. I'm a witness. I'm one of those people who are experienced at this happening. So, okay, here we go. Walking can trim your waistline. I mean, yeah, it can trim your waistline. Obviously with diet, you know, it can trim, but this just talks about just walking in general. Walking improves your heart health. I just got through telling you about that, how it improves your heart health. Walking, something you can do, something you would love doing. I understand there's a lot of seniors and elderly people out here where walking can be kind of a hindrance. The pain, the knees, the joint pain, and all kind of stuff. And I want to say, you know, I mean, take it easy. You don't have to get out there and walk a marathon or anything. Just take it easy. But get moving. Get that blood flowing. Reduces arthritis pain. I mean, that's wonderful. Yeah, I want to say if you're walking, if you're relatively young and you have pain all over your body, kind of walk through it. Because sometimes if you exercise through pain, that's the best thing for that pain is to exercise through that pain. And suddenly that pain is gone. You don't need any headache pills. You don't need any pain pills. Sometimes it just takes walking, exercise to kill the pain. You may have to walk through the pain because you've heard that old slogan, no pain, no gain. And that's true. That's true. After, you know, you exercise, maybe in an hour or so, the pain has dissipated. Okay. Walking also improves your mental attitude. It helps you think. I'm a witness to that because every time I get out here and do some walking or some sort of exercise, my mental capability improves. And I'm sure that yours will too. Yours will too. Oh, there's no doubt about it. A certain amount of walking totally reduces your weight. just like it trims your waistline. Walking, it's phenomenal. It manages, walking can manage your high blood pressure. It can also help manage sugar, your high sugar, your type 2 diabetes. So exercise, and people, for people with diabetes, are very important. Just like the clip I just got through playing. Did I play the clip? Oh, that was elderly abuse. Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot. Okay. Anyway, it helps. Again, it helps to manage type 2 by diabetes. It help, and walking also helps to improve your balance, especially in older people. You know how older people are always falling, and you remember that commercial, I've fallen and I can't get up. Exercise, walking can reduce you having those kinds of accidents, falling, because it improves your balance. If you stumble, you're able to catch yourself before you actually hit the floor or hit the ground. So walking is good for that, and that's exercise. So because a lot of, too many elderly people are falling in their own homes. And when someone says, that's real. A lot of people used to make jokes about it, but that's a real happening. It happens all the time where older people fall and they can't get up. And they're down there on that floor and they can't, and that's just it is just so wrong for that to happen. And to keep that from happening, especially when older people, they're living alone and there's nobody around. They have no family, nothing whatsoever. One of the things that can keep them from falling is to exercise. It controls your balance, you know, and that's good. That's a good thing. It gives you strong bones, you know, because why does it give you strong bones? Because you, if you're out here walking and the sun is shining, I mean, you're getting vitamin D from the sun itself. So, and it makes your bones a lot stronger, you know, and that's what you need, a lot stronger. People talk about osteoporosis. That's just, it happens, but walking can improve it, you know. And I don't care what age you are. If you're 110, you have to do some kind of exercise, you know, to get that blood flowing. Because if that blood is just sedentary and is not moving, you're setting yourself up for all kinds of things. Exercise, walking can reduce the size of your buttocks, reduce the size of your butt. And a lot of these women out here got big butts. They can reduce the size of their butts if they want to by walking. You know, I mean, that's extra weight, you know. So a lot of women think they look good with big butts. You know, they don't want to lose it. they're not going to lose it. But sometimes you know, if you're carrying around a lot of weight in your hip area, walking can reduce some of that. Okay, reduce body fat, of course. Increase your lifespan, of course. I mean, you live longer. Exercise will make you live longer, and walking is that form of exercise that can help you to live a lot longer, okay? Reduce stress. Walking, exercise, no doubt about it, reduces your stress. And reducing stress is another way of living longer. Living longer, as I've said, it's good for your brain also. It also boosts your immune system. So walking is great. It should be done by everybody. I mean, just because you see a lot of people driving around in their brand new cars and all of this, but you think of it this way. Do not ever feel bad because you see people driving around your neighborhood or your area in brand new cars and you're walking. Now, who's more healthier? That person who's driving around in that 2017 or you just walking for 20 or 30 minutes a day? Who's more healthier? You or that person? You are, not the person in that great looking car. You are more healthier because you're getting exercise. You're exercising. Your life is being prolonged. This person that's in this nice looking car, They're just sitting there. Their feet are going from the accelerator to the brake. But you are getting your blood to circulate. So don't ever feel bad about being a walker or just walking. It's healthy for you. It's good for you. You'll live a lot longer. You'll think better. It reduces stress. It gives you strong bones. And there are so many other positive things that you can get from walking than you cannot get from driving or just being sedentary or not doing anything or being lazy. That's out. No one should be lazy. No, especially if you're young, even if you're old, you know, get out there and have fun. Walk. Don't let anybody make fun of you because you're a walker. Okay. You know, you may not want to drive. You may gave up driving. So don't not let anybody make fun of you because you're a walker, because in the long run, you are more healthier because you're exercising and that person in that car is not. They may look good, but you are more healthier. So you have to think about yourself. Try not to think about other people and how they feel about you or what they think about you. It is your life, and you're the one that's going to have to deal with it, not them, not anybody else. So you get out there and you make sure that you exercise as much as you can, because it's going to keep you alive. Remember, you do not need an expensive gym membership. Nobody does unless they want to. I mean, if you can get yourself a gym membership if you want a personal trainer, or you're trying to gain muscle or whatever, or you want to weight quickly and fast and that kind of thing. Even then, I don't think that's all that necessary. But always exercise. Always try to eat properly. Always get out here and enjoy the sun, the weather, and have fun at it, and don't care what other people think. It's your life. It's not theirs. So you're going to do the best you can for yourself.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw. From the spawn.
All right. Thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Have a good one out there. Bye-bye.